This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
It's my pleasure to welcome Howard Blum to the show. He is a contributing editor for Vanity Fair, the former Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for The Village Voice and The New York Times, author of the New York Times bestsellers American Lightning, Terror, Mystery, and The Birth of Hollywood, A Gangland, How the FBI Broke the Mob, and Out There, The Government's Secret Quest for Extraterrestrials, and author of the new book, The Last Good Night, a World War II story of espionage, adventure, and betrayal. Howard, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Good to speak with you.
Yeah, good to have you on the show. And you are located in New York, is that correct?
Yes, I'm actually right now in the part of Long Island, New York, in the Hamptons, Sag Harbor.
Fantastic. Tell us a little bit about your newest book, The Last Good Night. World War II has obviously been covered extensively. Tell us your angle on this.
Well, this is the story of Betty Pack, who was an American socialite. She grew up in Minnesota and then Washington, D.C., and she became a spy for the Allies. She was involved in many consequential missions that helped the Allies win the war. But my book, which is a true story, is also not just a suspenseful, I hope, espionage thriller, but also sort of a psychological detective story, if you will. I try to explain how Betty made this journey from a glamorous socialite into being a spy, and a spy who really used the bedroom as her operational battlefield. That's how Betty won her missions. That's how she got the job done.
The bedroom in what way, when you say that?
Well, Betty was a seductress. I got the title, The Last Good Night, from something the CIA told me when I met them. They tell their new agents, the last person to whom you say good night is always the most dangerous. And that was Betty. She was the personification of that warning. She used the bedroom to get her secrets. And time after time, in her many missions, that's how she operated. For example, at 1941, the U.S. government was concerned about the first joint Allied American-British operation that were going to invade North Africa. The key to success of that mission would be getting the Vichy ciphers. These were ciphers that the Vichy government, that was the Nazi puppet state government of France, had in their embassy in Washington. It was sort of an impossible mission, and the ciphers were in the second floor of a well-guarded embassy in a safe. Well, they gave Betty the job to get this, and she went ahead methodically to just accomplish just that. First, she seduces a member of the Vichy embassy in Washington. Then she gets him to lead her to the safe. The OSS, which is the precursor to the CIA, has taken a convict out of jail down south. They called him the Georgia Cracker, and he taught her how to crack the safe. And she's able to get in the safe, get the ciphers, give them to the Allies. And then when 33,000 Allied troops land on the beaches of North Africa, they're able to do this successfully in large measure because of the ciphers, the information that Betty has gotten for them.
An interesting thing, and I would agree with you, well, and the CIA, I guess, about the last good night, because that is the most dangerous person. it's interesting we try to protect ourselves from the outside world, but the danger is right next to us a lot of times, so that's a very good point.
A person like Betty, who was able to live on so many different planes simultaneously, to live with such moral ambiguity, she could say anything to anyone at the moment, and then when the moment passed, she could act completely differently. The only people she was ever loyal to, that she maintained this sense of honor and allegiance, was to the spy masters in the country she served. That's why she was a very flawed human being, a difficult wife, mother, and daughter, yet she was at the same time a perfect spy.
Yeah. How big was her impact? I mean, when you talk about her operation being the bedroom and so forth, you know, how widespread was her impact?
Impact was very consequential. She, as I mentioned, the invasion of North Africa, she played a key role. And the Enigma machine, which broke the Nazis' code,
right.
She was in Poland in 1938. She helped get the Enigma machine for the British to take it to Bletchley Park. She played a key role in what the Poles were doing to crack the Enigma code. And she alerted the Allies to this. And she got this information, but because of an affair she was having with a Polish diplomat, he informed her of what was going on behind the scenes. And she passed this to the Allies. Then there was the Italian naval ciphers. These were tremendously important for the Allies because the British fleet was overwhelmed in the Mediterranean. She got these ciphers, and then at a battle off the southern tip of Greece, Cape Matapan, she provided the British with the information that allowed them to destroy the British fleet, and then the British were able to maintain the Mediterranean as a British sea for the rest of the war.
Amazing that one person, especially a female in that day, could have such a large impact, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, but she showed the value of human operatives. I mean, today we live in a world of, you know, cracking iPhones, hacking into computers, and yet that has not really been that successful. When we look at the tragedies of Brussels and Paris, and even in this country, in 9/11, we think that maybe rather being concerned with electronic intelligence would be better, more effective if we had human operatives who could get close to the enemy. Perhaps more than water bedding, we need maybe more water bedding. We need more Betty Packs.
Very interesting. And that shows the value of what they call social engineering, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It shows how an agent really needs to be an operative who can get into the field rather than just and get close to the enemy. Then he literally got close in the bedroom rather than trying to just hack in their computer.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Hey, I'd like to ask you, you know, another one of your books, the title really fascinates me, about Hollywood, American Lightning, Terror, Mystery, and the Birth of Hollywood. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. American Lightning is, again, another true story about how 1910, the Los Angeles Times was bombed. It was a tumultuous time in America, and 21 people were killed. And William Burns, Billy Burns, the great American detective, the real-life American Sherlock Holmes, is given this case. He works with D.W. Griffith, who's a great Hollywood director who's really inventing Hollywood at that time. He helps him. D.W. Griffith becomes politicized in the process, and they both go up against Clarence Darrow, who's defending the men accused of the bombing. And what becomes so interesting is that Darrow realizes the men he's defending are guilty. So what does the great Clarence Darrow do? He bribes jurors, and he's caught bribing jurors. And Darrow then goes on trial for jury tampering. It's really a story about a war that's breaking out in America at the turn of the century between labor and capital, and America in tumult, and at the same time how the cinema is being built and the movie business reaches into all our lives just as politics does. And it sort of leads in many ways to the book I've written now, The Last Good Night, because Betty is a character really made for the movies. And The Last Good Night has been bought by Sony Pictures, and there have been reports in the press that Jennifer Lawrence is in conversations to play Betty Pack.
Her career is going quite well, I would say. Jennifer Lawrence, of course.
Yes, and I hope this will be the capstone of her career, because she has this ability. Betty Pak was 26 years old and glamorous, and at the same time, she was an actress in her way, as every spy must be. Every spy has to live on different levels. And it's hard for a spy to do this. It's also hard for an actress to do this. And I think Jennifer Lawrence can bring that talent to the screen in her portrayal of Betty Pak. I'm excited by the possibilities in that movie.
When you talk about the birth of Hollywood, does that birth have any impact on Hollywood today? Do you see it?
Well, sure. What happened when D.W. Griffith was, as I say, inventing Hollywood, all the studios, which used to be back east, they were in New York City or New Jersey, they moved to Hollywood so they could really shoot all year round. And also what D.W. Griffith did, he invented the star system. Stars weren't identified. He put their names on the screen and we knew them. He created the Mary Pickford, who lead to the Jennifer Lawrences of today. And that, too, was important. And he also did movies that told long stories, large narratives that were suspenseful, as I hope this book and this movie will be. And so, yes, there's a direct correlation for what D.W. Griffith did when he was, as I say, inventing Hollywood, and the way the movies are today. The movies today are the children of D.W. Griffith.
It's interesting the parallels really between these two books and these two stories and time frames and so forth. With all this government spying in the news, and you mentioned before electronic spying and how we talked about how the social engineering could be much more powerful than cracking an iPhone code or the encryption on an iPhone, for example. Do you see government agencies hiring more women for this reason? You know, this kind of honey trap is pretty powerful. Maybe that's a lot easier than all the stuff the NSA is doing. It's, you know, sort of a new version of the oldest profession, if you will.
Point. Yeah. I think governments are realizing this, too. The CIA now is 40% women. The MI6, which is the British Secret Service, is actively recruiting women for honey traps to be seductresses. This was revealed in the WikiLeaks by internal documents of MI6. That's their ambition, and I'm sure the CIA is doing it, too. At the CIA, Betty Pak is revered as a real heroine of American espionage. You know, the TV show Homeland, well, Betty Pak was the real thing.
Right, yeah, very interesting. You know, the thing we don't know, though, is when you say the CIA is 40% female, which is interesting, I would have never thought, really, we don't know what the percentage of actual operatives is, actual spies, you know, that could be clerical workers and so forth. It's really impossible to know, isn't it?
It is impossible to know, but the CIA considers everyone who works there to be an operative. Everyone there is sort of working for the same goal and has security clearances. They consider all their employees to be spies, in effect.
Sure, sure. Hey, tell us about extraterrestrials, you know, the government's secret quest. Give us a little more insight onto that.
Well, that book was written several years ago out there, and it really was a sort of a Times, New York Times reporter approach to what the government was really doing. And what I was able to find out is that the government has various working groups where they're trying to find out, just as any curious person, you know, what really is happening. A Cheyenne Mountain, which is our NORAD radar systems, have tracked objects, but they haven't been able to identify. There's no room filled with little green men that we've captured. But at the same time, there are things that the government is conceding we can't explain. We just don't know the answers to. And also, if many people in the government sincerely believe that within the next 50 to 100 years, life will be found on other planets, we're able to identify more and more planets that are breeding grounds for life, that have water-based biological systems. And it seems to be only a matter of time until this happens. You know, that, curing cancer, those will be the great events of our children and grandchildren's lives. That will be the history that they will inherit. But it hasn't happened yet. But this is something our government is focused on, even to the point of having exobiological labs, as they're called, trying to imagine what life on other planets would look like, or they're trying to recreate it, how it would have evolved.
Fascinating. I remember when I was a kid watching I think there were reruns, if I'm not mistaken, of Project Blue Book, the show. And it's just fascinating to me, Howard, that nowadays virtually everyone on the planet has a camera with them all the time. Most of the times it's a video camera in their phone. And of course, that's not how it used to be. Yet, why aren't there more UFO sightings? It's interesting that there were so many before and now we just don't see any. I guess the extraterrestrials are hiding out because they know we have cameras, right? Is that the reason?
We will hear in our lifetime as those signals from other planets in space. I think the various radio telescopes will pick up a signal that there's some sort of life out there, intelligent life beyond our solar system. I'm convinced of that. I'm also convinced we haven't really encountered it yet.
Yeah.
But I remain hopeful that this signal will go through the heavens and will reach us eventually.
Just by the odds alone and the statistics, they are very much in your favor of that being true. So, you know, it's a big universe, that's for sure. It's a very big universe.
I try to write about it in a way like The Last Good Night, is a New York Times reporter's approach to the story. I try to use the facts. A story on extraterrestrials, that book was excerpted in the New York Times magazine. My story on Betty Pak is based on facts, too. I spent a good deal of time at Cambridge University in England, where her archives are, where her memoirs, her diaries, her letters, even her address book are all stored there. So I could recreate in her own words, in her own mind, what she was thinking and feeling at certain times in both her operational life, when she was engaged in these missions, and also in her romantic life, and try to create a full portrait of her as a woman and as a spy.
Yeah, fascinating. Fascinating stuff. It's great to not just have a bunch of conjecture. I mean, when we go to the extraterrestrial subject, you know, people just want to believe, and most of the material out there is the huge leaps in logic I found. So the New York Times reporter approach is very refreshing, to say the least. Just to wrap up here, as we were just chatting for a moment off air before we started, you said, oh, I can talk about anything you want, you know, politics, whatever. I might as well just ask you that question because, you know, you're Pulitzer Prize winning reporter, got a huge background here in media and so forth. What are your thoughts about what's going on in the world today? Just quickly, just want to throw it out there.
You know, as a reporter who's been around and seen lots of elections and also as a citizen, and a voter, I've never seen anything like this. You never know what people are going to say next. Today is the day of the Indiana primaries. They haven't voted yet, but there was a classic meltdown by Sandra Cruz saying things that were phenomenal. And at the same time, he was responding to things that Donald Trump said, where Donald Trump's source of information was the National Enquirer, of all places. I mean, things are being said in this campaign that are scary. And wonder, you know, what will happen in a general election, who'll win. You know, as a reporter, it's fun to cover, fun to watch, but as an American and as a father of three children, I look uncomfortably to the world they're going to inherit.
Yeah, it's really up in the air. It seems like the government is just screwing up everything they can. And of course, the two-party system is an epic scam. But on the good side, and you alluded to it before, the technology in the private sector, it is mind-boggling. As I like to say, it's an amazing time to be alive. So many days, Howard, I cannot figure out whether I should be a pessimist or an optimist because I'm very conflicted.
I think that's a human condition, yes.
Yeah, it definitely is. Well, good stuff. Give out your website or Twitter information or whatever you'd like so people can find the books and find out more about you.
For my books, I have Howard Blum, BLUM.com. That's Howard Blum, one word, .com. And I have a Facebook page, Author Howard Blum. And The Last Good Night is on sale at Amazon, all sorts of bookstores, and Costco, too, which is discounting it rather dramatically.
And I have a feeling you don't like that, from what it sounds like.
I want my book to get as many people as possible. I'm actually excited and elated that my book is in Costco. I love that. I love the fact. And no, I'm just telling people who don't want to pay, who are looking for a bargain, Costco's a place where you can get it. And go there. I love that Costco has my book.
Go get a deal at Costco. Absolutely. Well, Howard Blum, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good to speak with you.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.